3 down, 1 to go. The final hour of this Tuesday morning offering. Jeff Nowak can join us in a second. WWL Saints sideline reporter. Then we'll talk to Dr. Judy Ho, clinical forensic neuropsychologist, host of the Supercharged Life podcast about boredom. Is it sometimes a good thing for kids? Research indicating sometimes things like taking them on errands with you or just letting them coming up with their own ways of entertaining themselves can make kids happier. With that being said, we welcome in Jeff Nowak now, Saints sideline reporter. How you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing good. I got coffee in me. It's a new week. Falcons hate week officially, so that's always a good time.
Absolutely. Great job as always, Sunday. Listen, you, Deuce, and Haas on the broadcast. Tell me your takeaways from the Eagles game.
Well, one of my takeaways is that I'm starting to truly believe that Deuce McAllister can see the future.
Yep.
For the second consecutive week, he was like, hey, I want a big play, and he got a big play. Hey, I want a turnover, he got a turnover. Like, immediately, it's like they're listening to him. I don't know. But, no,
it
that
is
was a
freaky.
Frustrating game.
I'm tell you what, it is freaky. I know Robert Carroll called him something else. I called him Deustradamus.
I think Robert was on the same page. He said, I think it was like Nostalamus or something like that.
Yeah.
But, and he's like, yeah, you could see it coming. I was like, I didn't see it coming. Only you, anyway. Yeah, it's the whole thing. But, man, that was a frustrating game.
While we're talking about it, let me just look at something I texted somebody here. Because he not only called the offensive play, but he described what the defense was going to do as well right after that. So he was something, man. I'm telling you. But go ahead. I'm sorry, Jeff.
Yeah, no, but, I mean, that's a frustrating game. I was on with Newell yesterday. I think the way I described it was like, hey, you look at that game, and the Saints did every ancillary thing you can do to win a game other than score points on offense, mm-hmm. right? Like you forced turnovers. You got to stop. You got multiple turnovers on downs. You got an interception in the red zone. You blocked the punt, right? Like it was just so frustrating because you felt like if they could sustain one drive throughout the course of that game, other than that touchdown drive when they were finally behind, you would have taken control of that game. It felt like whichever team got a 2-score lead in that game was going to win it.
Mm-hmm.
And the Saints were just never able to do it. And, you know, you can quibble with the decision to go for it on 4th and 1. I think it was the right decision. I questioned the play calling more so than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
I would have liked to see them get, like, my big thing is, hey, I don't mind you going for it on 4th down, but if you know you're going for it on 4th down, I would have loved to see them get aggressive, maybe run play action, take a shot at the end zone on 3rd and 1, because you know how they're going to play you. They're going to line up in that 6-1, you know, bare front that they've been showing the whole game. You're not going to be able to run it. And instead, they chose to run what I imagine is in the playbook, in the game plan, as a Taysom Hill play, which is a direct snap to Alvin Kamara.
Mm-hmm.
Or it would have been a direct snap to Taysom Hill with Derek Carr sprinting out to the right. Instead, you put Alvin Kamara in there, and for obvious reasons, there's less that the defense has to worry about. So, you know, I do question some of the play calling. I don't know if it was Clint Kubiak's best day. You know, it was bound to happen as kind of teams got to look at what he wanted to do on offense. And I think Vic Fangio had a great counter for the kind of heavy formations that the Saints have been rolling out. I thought Zach Bond had a great day at the line of scrimmage. You were able to take advantage of him down the field. I thought the interior offensive line really struggled, particularly after Eric McCoy went out, obviously. Cesar Ruiz, I mean, Jalen Carter was a beast in that game. And you knew that that's what he's supposed to be. I don't know if he's necessarily shown it all the time, but that's the guy that the Eagles definitely thought they were getting coming out of Georgia. And Cesar Ruiz got a load of him. Derek Carr just had no time. So it was a frustrating game. You hope that Eric doesn't miss too much time if he can't get out there this week. But hopefully they can bounce back from that. Because, you know, a 2-1 start, when you're looking at the beginning of the season, you say 2-1. I feel like everyone would have jumped on board with that. Right now,
sure,
you didn't want it to happen the way it did. But, you know, you're in a good spot. You got to go win a game in Atlanta. And we'll see what they can do.
Tell me about the Saints. To me, just didn't look, in the first 2 weeks, they looked focused and prepared. And I know that's always a function of who you match up against and you think you know, but until you line up against the guy across from you, you really don't. But they didn't seem to be as focused and prepared. And I know the injuries had a lot to do with that and throwing that, and McCoy's injury especially, and throwing that off. But did they look as focused and prepared to you as they did the first 2 weeks?
It's tough for me to grade focus. Like, I don't know what's going on in these guys' heads to the point, like, okay, were you prepared? But there was definitely sloppiness. Like, you could watch that game and see, like, yeah, there was some sloppy decision-making. You look at the two timeouts the Saints had to call in the second half. One was because two guys went in motion at the same time, mm-hmm. and you can't do that. You know, the officials honestly probably could have flagged that. Instead, they let the Saints get the timeout, which, you know, that's not really how it's supposed to work. If it's a legal procedure, it's a legal procedure. You're not supposed to treat it like a delayed game, but whatever. You know, they burned a timeout there, and that's just, you know, guys not doing their jobs correctly. The second timeout, they just didn't line up correctly, right? And so, I don't know, you could maybe part of that is, Eric, you know, the communication that you would typically have. Maybe part of that is guys playing out, you know, guys that you typically wouldn't have on the field or in different positions with Lucas Patrick at center. Ole Udo was playing left guard. Cesar Ruiz was banged up at one point. Nick Saldivari got in. Then you bumped Ole Udo over to right guard. But I think that really was only for one play. So I don't know. You're going to look at that and you're going to try to figure it out. Trevor Penning had a kind of bonehead penalty where he decided to block Darius Slay basically into the Saints bench. And it didn't cost you because you scored a touchdown on that drive anyway. But no, there was definitely a level of, it just seemed frazzled at points. Like, it felt like guys were getting a little, you know, like the Eagles were winning that game up front. They were whipping the Saints offensive line up front. And I think maybe to an extent, nothing the Saints are trying to do is working. And that becomes frustrating. You get a little frazzled and you make mistakes. So I think it was more about that. I think this is kind of a situation where, hey, things went so easily in the first 2 weeks that you didn't necessarily get tested in stressful scenarios the way that you probably would have hoped over the first 2 weeks of the season. I thought they wore down in the second half of that game from a fatigue standpoint, you know, in ways that you probably, you know, if you don't blow out your first two opponents and you're playing into the fourth quarter, like, look at the defensive line in the fourth quarter. It didn't seem like they had that burst. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think part of that is these guys are playing into the fourth quarter for the first time all year. It's crazy that it took until week three for that to happen. But, you know, you build that up by playing, and they just haven't had that type of intense game to kind of get meddled in. So I'm hopeful that that's it. I don't think it was a, you know, focus thing. I think they prepared as well as they have. But yeah, you definitely got to be better than that.
And there could be a lot of reasons for it, but I'm just thinking of guards pulling in each other. And I think at one point Derek Carr turned the wrong way. And then you had the three Saints defenders colliding on that long tight end play. I wouldn't imagine that happening in the first two games. You wouldn't see that happening. You know what I mean?
No, I'm sure it definitely was a much more, heated film review than you might have had in the first 2 weeks. The first two weeks, you're kind of looking for any mistakes to point out just so you have notes on what people need to work on. It's not very difficult to find in this game. And you're right. A lot of it was not necessarily the Saints getting beat. It was the Saints making mistakes. And that's frustrating.
Tell me about Atlanta.
Atlanta. Ooh, well, that's, I still can't get a gauge on Atlanta. It's tough. I feel like Kirk Cousins can't move to save his life. Mm-hmm. And that's a situation that the Saints should be able to take advantage of. Now, Bijan Robinson, if I had to pick a kind of Saquon Barkley 2.0, it'd be Bijan Robinson. They're very similar players. So the Saints are going to have, you know, they had a hard time stopping him in week 10, week 12, whatever week they're up in Atlanta last year. I mean, he had a day against them. They did better in week 18. So maybe they kind of have figured out a book on him a little bit. But no, he's going to cause some of the same problems in the sense that you can bottle him up all day. You give him one crease and he can just go.
Yep.
And so you're going to have to be careful. What the difference in this matchup is going to be, so much of the danger of Saquon Barkley is you have to also play Jalen Hurts at the same time, in this, at least in that Eagles offense. That's not really the case with Kirk, in the sense of you don't have to spy Kirk. He's not going anywhere. You know, he's going to be exactly where you think he's going to be the whole game. So, no, I think the Saints have a good chance. The Saints defense should feel good about that matchup and what they're able to do. You've got to cover on the outside. You've got to take Kyle Pitts away and see what happens. On defense, that's where I get concerned on offense for the Saints is where I get concerned. If you don't have Eric McCoy, can you come up with a better game plan this week to play without him than you had against the Eagles? That pass rush is really solid. We haven't seen Matt Judon yet in a game against the Saints. So, you know, they're going to have to scout him out, figure out what he likes to do. They I don't think they had to go. I think he was out when they played the Patriots last year, if I recall correctly. So they really haven't had much of a chance to go against him. But either way, you know, it's a game that you look at similarly to that Bucs game last year, where you started 2-0, you went up to Green Bay, a game you definitely should have won, and you came back and laid an egg against Tampa in a divisional game that really kind of set the tone for how that season was going to go. And this year it's kind of the same. You lose a tough game to the Eagles. You probably should have won based on how it went. And then you're going to go to Atlanta for a division game. You really need to win. 3-1 and 2-2 feel light years apart in terms of how you started the season,
especially
knowing that you have Kansas City on deck.
Yeah, and having two division wins. If you beat Atlanta on Sunday and then you have already beaten Carolina. What about Taysom Hill? We know anything about him?
Taysom Hill, I believe the report is that he's dealing with kind of a lung issue, a bruised lung of some kind. And that makes sense, like when you send a guy out of a game. Yeah. You know, like we saw Drew deal with kind of a collapsed lung against the 49ers a few years ago. That can't happen. And it's dangerous. You know, it's something you got to take care of. It doesn't sound like it's that significant, but it's just something that you got to deal with. I think he was reasonably close to going. They downgraded him to doubtful on Saturday. DA said that he's after the game, he's hopeful to have him back next week. I think he said that yesterday as well. So we'll have to see how it goes. He was a limited participant in Thursday and Friday's practice last week. He missed Wednesday. So if he's able to go full, this week at any point, you feel good about it. Because I think they missed him a lot, particularly you're talking about short yardage scenarios. In a game where you don't have your offensive lineman, he's just a guy that's your starting center, and then you have guys playing out of position. He's a guy that can go get a hard yard on his own, right? And I think you really missed that at certain points, because apparently Jamal Williams isn't a guy they wanted to turn to in that scenario either, which is strange to me. But Taysom should be on his way back. It's tough to know exactly where he's at, just because it's kind of I think a lot of it is a pain tolerance thing when you're dealing with a bruise kind of situation of that kind, like a deep bruise. But I'm hopeful he's back, and I think they need him. He has also been a Falcons killer throughout his career, so he's a guy you definitely want in that matchup.
What was so frustrating about the Eagles game is that they only gave up 15 points, and they contained them until they didn't, right?
Yeah, well, part of that is that, you know, they let up a ton of yards in that game. I think it's kind of crazy to think they didn't allow a point through the first three quarters, but Braden Mann only punted once. Right. The Saints defense only forced one punt in that game, so while they were effective in keeping the Eagles out of the end zone, the whole bend but don't break thing. They allowed a lot of yards. They did not get off the field. And so when you're talking about, hey, you left your defense on the field way too long, that's at least partly in their responsibility of, hey, on third down, you got to get off the field. Alante Taylor, I know, missed at least one tackle on third down. There was a few instances where you got him in third and medium, third and long. You really got to get off the field, and you're unable to. So, you know, it's a weird game to look at. If Nick Sirianni takes the easy field goals and they're up 9-3 at one point in that game, probably instead they're down 3-0. If he doesn't attempt a 60 yarder, there was a point in that game where it felt like Nick Sirianni was trying to win the Saints the game, genuinely. And it could, because that missed 60 yarders is what set up the Saints touchdown. Their only touchdown of the game. They started at midfield because Nick decided, I'm going to try a 60-yard field goal right now to go up 7, which is crazy. Yeah. And the Saints took advantage and scored a touchdown. So it's a weird game to look at because I don't know. Like, I think the defense would probably look at that and say, we need to be better in terms of getting off the field. But you did make plays in the red zone when you needed to. You got stops on fourth down. So, it's a frustrating game. I think it would have been equally frustrating for the Eagles if they lost, because they would have felt like, hey, we dominated this game on offense.
Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate it, as always.
Appreciate
talking
time,
again soon. All right, Jeff Nowak, WWL Saints sideline reporter. Of course, he got the new podcast that has dropped, I believe. Right, Jeff, bring you back real quick. He's gone. But Inside the Black and Gold podcast, I believe, has dropped. And today on Sports Talk, you can join Mike Dettelier, Steve Geller, Green Wave head coach John Sumrall will be around 4:20. He'll talk with Mark Schlereth, NFL insider. And then the Saints Hour tonight with the voice of the Saints, Mike Haas, along with Executive VP GM Mickey Loomis on WWL and the Odyssey app. We'll take a break, come back, talk with Dr. Judy Ho about kids and boredom when we return on WWL. It is 9:31. We're always concerned about mental health here at WWL, and we spend every other Tuesday talking to our friend Dr. Judy Ho, clinical and forensic neuropsychologist, host of the Supercharged Life podcast. And today we're going to talk about boredom and kids. Good morning, Dr. Judy. How are you?
Good morning. How are you, Tommy?
I'm okay. Dr. Judy, fresh off of her appearance at SoFi Stadium, where she watched her 49ers play the Rams. Accurate?
Don't even talk about it. Yeah. I'm so bummed out about that game. But, yeah, it was nice to see them in person, obviously.
Did you have fun, at least?
Until the tide turned. Yeah. Until the tide turned. But you know what? There was so many more 49ers fans at the stadium. I mean, it was like home game. It was ridiculous. Yeah. So I was at least in good company.
It did look like a 49er home game. It really did. Let's talk about kids and what the neuroscience shows about always keeping them. You know, sometimes we think that we always have to have the electronic device in the kids' hands, or they always have to be quiet or kept occupied or this or that or the other thing. What does the research show, Dr. Judy?
Yeah, so I think it's really interesting, right? We've kind of, I read this article on Psychology Today that your staff was so kind to send me. And, you know, it was about sort of earlier generations being raised, basically being bored and figuring things out to do, right? And actually, that probably sharpens your imagination and also builds distress tolerance, I would think, because it's really about, you know, well, when you can't have what you want exactly when you want it, what are you going to do about it? You know, and that's a good life skill. I think, obviously, it's always one of those things where sometimes too much of a good thing maybe gets a little too extreme and then it's not so good. And I think that good thing is that we've started to learn that, hey, parents should be more hands-on with their children, right? And so now we're constantly trying to entertain our kids at every turn. And, you have to, no matter how long of a work day you had, you still have to spend dedicated time with your kids when you come home. You know, there's all of these things that I think feel a lot more like what is supposed to be good parenting these days. And maybe parents are working a little too hard. That's a possible interpretation of that. That's probably why, as we talked about a few weeks ago, the Surgeon General's warning about parenting stress being at an all-time high, because parents are working out of the house. They're busy. They're full-time employed. At the same time, they're also spending more than ever time with their children when they do have free time. And that's a lot. You know, when do you have time for yourself, or when do you have time just to decompress, do the things that you want to do for a change? And maybe that's the piece that we should know, that it's okay sometimes if you're not constantly with your kid doing things that they want to do. Maybe it's okay sometimes that they're figuring it out for themselves.
And yet, as I read this, I think that, you know, what's the old saying? Idle hands are the devil's workshop. You got to keep them busy.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, you know, again, I think it's all about moderation, right? Like, you can't just have them sitting around all the time and expect them to figure things out and learn things. I mean, you do have to stimulate them. You do have to teach them. You do have to, you know, do things that help them to challenge themselves. So it's probably just like anything else. Maybe the answer is somewhere in between. Like, hey, whenever you can and you have the capacity, you know, try to challenge your children, try to spend quality time with them. But, you know, every once in a while when you're just too tired, or it's not really possible, or maybe you're dealing with your own stuff and you just need a night off, maybe that's okay too.
You know, I was watching some of the funeral coverage of Sybil Morial yesterday, and Mark Morial, mm-hmm. her son, was saying that, you know, if you were her child, you had chores, you had this, you had that, you had responsibilities, you had to do this. Do chores sometimes get left out of this? And would that be talk about the importance, I guess, of chores when it comes to raising kids, what the research indicates about not only keeping them entertained and occupied, but giving them something to do and contributing to the family and a feeling of accomplishment, et cetera.
Oh, absolutely. Chores are, I think, essential. I don't remember when I had chores. I don't think that, you know, they're called chores in our house. I mean, it's just like things that we did, right? I was born in Taiwan, so I didn't come to the United States until about age 9. And so I don't really actually know what the equivalent of the word chores is in Mandarin, because I don't think we use them in our household. Or maybe there isn't one. I don't know. But, you know, we didn't really call them chores. I just had responsibilities. And it's pretty much as far back as I remember. And so, you know, Luca, he's almost three, and he's been doing, you know, quote unquote chores. I mean, I don't know, since he was maybe one and a half. I mean,
really?
Obviously it's developmentally appropriate. Like, he helps me to put the laundry in because he thinks that it's fun. He thinks it's fun when I'm doing chores. I mean, that's how it started. Look,
I didn't think you had him paved in a driveway or anything. I wasn't saying that.
No way. I mean, listen, you know, just because I'm a psychologist, like, obviously far from a perfect parent, this all started organically because he started getting interested in the things that I was doing. And I was like, oh, well, you want to help mommy do her laundry? So he would, you know, help me load the clothes into, you know, the laundry, and then he would into the washing machine, and then he would, you know, close the door and press the button. And so he's been doing that, you know, for at least a year. And then he sees me putting dishes away, so I started having him put his own dishes away. He can't reach the higher cabinets, but he can reach his cabinet, right, where his dishes are. So I was like, well, you can put your stuff away. So that's kind of how that all started happening. It was a very organic process. I didn't force it. But then I realized, oh, he's interested in what I'm doing. So he helps me cook, right? Even though, of course, he's 2 and a half. He's very supervised. But it's like, okay, well, you can mix the batter for the pancakes. And so kids actually, you know, if you give them the chance, they like observing what adults are doing. They want to be like you, right? And that's a perfect chance to get in there and be like, okay, well, you know, why don't you help me with some of these daily activities? And then as they get older, obviously you can expand on how much they can do.
Somebody texted in and said, my kids look at board games, B-O-A-R-D, as B-O-R-E-D games, board games. What can you say about, I guess, I think there is something to be said about a family getting together and playing a good old-fashioned board game where you're talking to each other in between rolls of the dice, et cetera?
Oh, yeah. I love board games, but probably took a little while before I developed an interest in them. I try to buy some, you know, what I thought were age-appropriate board games. Believe it or not, they do make them for two-year-olds. But yeah, no, Lucas not having it. I mean, he's like, what is this? So I think that maybe it's a developmental thing, maybe it's a personality thing. But I think if you make it a family activity and it's structured and it's kind of like what everyone's just going to do that night, that can be helpful. You know, it's not forcing it down their throat, but it's kind of like, hey, once a month, our Saturday night activity is we're going to play board games. And, you know, you're going to participate. So either you bring the game that you like or you're going to play what we have on the table, right? And I do think there's something to be said about, I guess, what we would call nowadays analog entertainment, because it's not virtual entertainment. It's not as fast paced. It's not like YouTube. You know, when you get bored of a video, you just switch to the next one because they've got the sidebar scrolling with all other kinds of videos that might interest you. You know, board games, I mean, there's one objective and you have to finish the game, right? I mean, you could walk away from it, but then what's the alternative? I guess another board game if it's family board game night. So you have to be able to kind of sit through one thing. And I've been talking to a lot of parents of toddlers and younger children. And, you know, of course, it's like, people give varying levels of screen time, but I think YouTube is the hardest because every 2 minutes, if they're bored of something, they just immediately scroll to the next video. But if you actually have them sit down and watch a full-length cartoon or even a cartoon movie, at the very least, it's one objective, it's one theme, right? And they're watching something from start to end, which I think overall is a little bit better for emotional regulation and development than YouTube videos, where literally it's like, everybody's just developing attentional issues in a way.
Can you sit down, Dr. Judy Ho, and watch a movie without picking up your phone? And I guess it depends on the movie.
That's a good question, Tommy. Yes, that is a really good question. And I would say that I oftentimes, when I start watching something, will start to get this feeling like I need to pick up my phone. Uh-huh. And a lot of times I do, and I'm like, oh, you know, and don't do that. But it's such a habit, right? We're so used to stimulation from all angles, you know, doing multiple things at a time. And I literally have to tell myself before I start a movie, I'm going to watch this without picking up anything else. Like, I have to remind myself, right? So that's what's crazy about it. Like, it kind of develops insidiously. Sometimes you don't realize that now you're doing everything that, you know, you say you're not going to do. So it is a habit that I have to essentially consciously make an effort to break.
All right, let me take a break. We'll pick it up when we come back, 504-260-1870. I think I have a way to keep kids entertained that I think we've gotten away from that had a lot to do with me developing the way I did, which may be a good thing, maybe a bad thing. I don't know, but it taught me a lot of things. I will explain what that is when we come back, talking to Dr. Judy Hoke, and it still does, as a matter of fact, today. Judy Hoke, clinical forensic neuropsychologist, host of the Supercharged Life podcast. If you have any questions or comments, 504-260-1870, 941, 19 till 10, traffic now, WWL. 9:46, 14 till 10, Tommy Tucker, WWL, back with Dr. Judy Ho. Doctor, a text comes in and says our four-year-old child has an anger problem. He throws a fit uncontrollably when he doesn't get what he wants. Also, he doesn't always listen. It'll take four times for us to say stop XYZ before he stops. 4 years old. Thoughts?
Yeah. So, you know, tantrums are the most common between the ages of 2 to 5. And occasional tantrums
are... Not if you work around here. I'm just kidding.
Well, as I said, most common. It just didn't ever happen again.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, you know, I understand the distress. And it's so sad to see your kids having a tantrum. I mean, Luca just had one last night. And he hasn't had one that bad in months and months and months. And so sometimes it can happen. I think the biggest thing is... really watching, well, first of all, how often is it occurring? I mean, if it's happening multiple times a week and the tantrums are going on for 30 minutes or longer each time, you know, that's not normative. And it is time to consult with a professional who can teach you some skills, both parenting skills and also child self-regulation skills to help with that. But I think if it's somewhat normative, but obviously just distressing because it's happening with somewhat of a frequency and it's clearly upsetting whenever it does happen, you know, it's really important to keep in mind a couple of things. One is only have one person managing the person when they're in the middle of a tantrum. So sometimes everybody wants to pitch in, you know, mom and dad and grandma, everybody has something to say to the person, try to calm them down. That's too overwhelming for a child when they're in the middle of a tantrum. So just have one person be the person to communicate with the child. I think the second thing is always to make sure that you speak in short sentences. You know, they're not going to be hearing your reasoning as you reason out, you know, why they couldn't get this toy or why they have to leave their friend's house at this point. It's got to just be really short. And there's little things that you can do to try to help them to self-soothe, like either demonstrating for them what to do, or sometimes if they're younger, like a four-year-old, I think sometimes you can still just kind of sit there and just hold them. Mm-hmm. If they don't want to be held, then you just tell them, like, do like mommy, take deep breaths, right? Or like, do you need some quiet time? Let's sit down here. You know, things that are very, very simple for a child to grasp and just helps them to learn emotion regulation skills at a developmentally appropriate phase. After the tantrum is over, then you have to talk about it. Sometimes you're just like, oh, big sigh of relief. I don't want to deal with this. Doesn't have to be immediate, but it should be within a few hours and say, you know, just a little while ago, you had this big tantrum. Can we talk about what that was? Can you tell me how I can help you next time when you get this upset so that we can prevent this from happening? Because that was upsetting for you and it was upsetting for me too. One tool that I found is really helpful is to get one of those emotional cards or emotional flip books that they sell on Amazon. They're pretty cheap. And it helps kids to communicate their feelings when they don't know, right? So if they don't know the word, they can at least point to the picture of how they feel. And that's a good starting place. Okay, well, you were mad. All right, so let's talk a little bit about what we can do when we're mad.
Somebody texted in. This is not a bad question. Is there an average time for a tantrum? Is there a time limit on a tantrum where it's like, okay, that's enough?
Yeah, that's a good related question. So I think, again, anything from a few minutes to 20 minutes, unbelievably, are normative. And I know that that's stressful when you think about it as a parent, and those 20 minutes can feel like forever. But usually they are able to be distracted after a period of time. So obviously, maybe not in the first 5 minutes. But after a period of time, most kids can be directed to something else. And so that is one way to try to shift them off of that. I think that if it's getting to 30 minutes multiple times a week, like I just mentioned, that is a little too much, and I think it's time to consult a professional.
I mentioned this earlier. What taught me a lot, and I know a lot about a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. I know a little about a lot of different things. Let's put it that way. Maybe not, you know, I'm not an engineer or anything, but you know what did that, Dr. Judy? Reading. Not necessarily. Mm-hmm. I used to love these biographies of people I would read. I would read novels. I would not know what this word meant, so I would look it up. It developed vocabulary. It kept me entertained. I think we've gotten away from that, and I think with the electronic devices, yeah. And I'm not trying to sound like an old-timer or anything, but actually, I'm reading a novel now, and I was talking to Jordan about this the other day, our producer, that it had been a long time since I'd done any recreational reading because I read so much for work. It's kind of nice. Have we gotten away from that? Do you think maybe that could be an answer if people could just get kids to read again?
Yeah, I mean, I love reading, but it was definitely something that I had to develop over time. Mm-hmm. And I think that it is very, very likely that we have gotten away from that because there's all of these other things that are stimulating us all the time. And so reading is great because obviously it helps you to develop really important English reading comprehension or whatever language that you prefer to read in, language comprehension skills. It also helps to develop your imagination. It actually does help to develop emotional regulation and distress tolerance because, you know, when there isn't anything else to do and you're bored and you're reading, it can become a favorite activity. Plus, of course, it's easy to take anywhere, to take a book somewhere. And so I do think that when you give a child a structured amount of time to read, that is a helpful way to do it. And, you know, if you're at home, you can just say, okay, 30 minutes before bedtime, go grab your favorite book. And like, we're all going to read. It's easiest if parents are doing the same thing, right? If you're going to tell your kid to do it, you got to do it too. So you got to put your device away and you pick a book and they pick a book and you guys just read side by side. And sometimes, you know, maybe they want to show you something in their book. That's fine. But for the most part, they're reading on their own. And I think that that is an amazing activity. I'm so glad that you brought that up.
And it can just expose you to so many other things where what happened for me was like, it's, well, wait, what is that? What is all that about? That was not part of my life. But then I realized that there were things beyond my immediate circle that was happening in the world. It makes sense to you?
Right. Plus, it's a conversation starter. I mean, we've all been in those situations, right? I mean, if you think back to your childhood, you know, maybe there was like a hot book everybody was reading and then like you would talk about it. Like, oh, hey, like, did you get to chapter 10 or did you finish the book? I mean, it's something to discuss with your peers. And most of the times, I think my peers and I were reading the same book, whether it was because at school or because we had similar interests. And it was always a great way to have a conversation.
Godfather, page 17. Just kidding. Dr. Judy, thank you. And have a great week. We'll talk to you again soon. Say hi to Luca. Dr. Judy Ho, clinical forensic neuropsychologist, host of the Supercharged Life podcast. Newell is out on location today. We'll talk to him about what he's got coming up for you when we return here on WWL.